Good afternoon, everyone. It's a non-webcast week, so we don't have the curtain behind us to shield the little image behind us. One of these days, we'll have to get one of our best artists to maybe take one of those baubles and scratch out what they have there and then put in Jeremiah 10, you know, the first few verses. Someone would come tomorrow or whenever and say, oh, wow, that must be something prophetical. It's in the Old Testament. That'd be really awesome. Then they turn there and they find out, oh, don't be like the pagans and go cut down a tree and decorate it with silver and gold. I wonder if that tree would be there next week. So one of these years we'll have to try a little science experiment, if you will. Well, speaking of science experiments, I combined two of my loves, if you will, the other week, and found a book at the thrift store. It's called Mr. Wizard's Science Secrets. It's grew up watching Mr. Wizard. I did not know he had such a long career. Apparently, his TV career started in 1951. I don't think any of us were alive here in 1951, so that's just a joke. Anybody here watch him in the 50s or 60s? All right, a couple in the back. Again, I don't think they're old enough. I don't know if they're telling the truth or not. You know, no, I'm just kidding. Yes, indeed. I mean, it's a prolific instructor. I went on to Wikipedia, actually, to kind of check the rest of his career out, make sure he didn't shoot up a convent or something, and, you know, don't want him to be a reference if he turned out, you know, or was a bad character. But, no, he was a good character. Bill Nye, when he died, said that basically the reason that we went to the moon was because of Mr. Wizard. That's something that is very honorable. And again, he's a very interesting guy. I grew up watching him in the 80s. I invited the kids to watch some YouTube of him, and only Peter responded. Peter's sick today. And even he and his mother, we were watching an episode, and she said it was just too slow. The experiments were just not as fast-paced as they could be. But me, I was going back to my youth in the 80s, sitting there watching Nickelodeon, you know, just reliving the good old days back in Turlock. You know, it's much simpler times, better times. I found an episode from the 60s. Like I said, he's been on for many, many years. He was quizzing a young lad of maybe 10 or 12 years old, you know, a young guy, and that's basically what his program was, about how to use a rotating wheel to move a block of wood on top of it up and down. Obviously, it's a bit of a problem. A wheel turns around, and the block of wood had to go up and down, so he had to kind of use his noggin to find out, okay, how do I get that spinning wheel to move the block up and down? And this little Edison, this, you know, real sharp little kid, was able to find three of the five ways that the wizard was wanting to move it, including a kind of a piston mechanism where, for those that are familiar with a car, there's a piston that gets moved up and down because there's a rotating cam underneath it. Well, the crank, the cam's on top for most cars. So there's other ways that he was able to find out how to move that block up and down from that spinning wheel. And that got my mind thinking into the idea of movement. We are told in Hebrews 4, verse 12, that the word of God is living and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword. I think the Old King James Version said quick. You know, it's living, it means alive. The movie, The Quick and the Dead, basically means the alive and the dead. So quick means living. Sometimes motion, vitality, can be hard to find in the book, you know, this big, thick book called the Bible. Motion can probably be perceived from Old Testament stories. You have Ruth. You know, it's a lot of action in there. She was a Moabitess that came into the land of Judea and was trying to escape the famine there and got into some tough times. And again, you can think in your mind that the story of Ruth, very, very action-packed in just a few short chapters. King David, he his life, boy howdy. I mean, that fills up quite big sections of the Old Testament where he was being chased here and there, and he was going through it in a very good attitude. You know, man that chased after the heart of God. Gideon. Gideon was somebody that, okay, let's go fight some people. How do we fight those people? How do you know that you've been chosen to fight this? There's stories in there that your mind can picture. Moses. Moses is a big one. It's Ten Commandment movies, a few months from being shown on TV. It's an annual thing where the sea parts. Those are big stories. You can picture them in your mind. Maybe even the New Testament. You can think of the book of Acts. You know, Paul. Paul's doesn't really have a good time in the book of Acts, but he makes it through okay. He lives to the end, you know, dot, dot, dot. You know, doesn't say that he didn't make it to the end, but the story that we know through history that he did make it to pass the book of Acts. But most of the text in the epistles of Paul, the letters that James and John wrote, they're not really in motion. Or are they? Let's take a look at some motion in the Bible. You could rather easily say that one of the most dominant themes of the Bible is the road or the path. Our conversion in our Christian life is called our walk, various places. The book of Psalms uses the Hebrew word derech, road or path, 76 times, including the very first verse of the very first chapter. Summarized as, happy are those not taking the path that sinners tread. Sinners go down a road that's very well tread. You can picture in your mind a camping path that you know where the path is because it's beaten down so much that there's grass and trees and other things, and there's just dirt in a certain part because it's been trodden on so much. Same thing for the sinner. Sinners go down a certain path so much that they just go back down that rut. They know exactly where to go and how to go. And there's some spiritual intent behind that that we may unfortunately stray down that path, but it's not a rut. We see our ways and we turn around. We're not in continuously going down that path of the sinners. Now our life is seen as a journey, a road that we take that you can think as a road map recorded in the book of life. Our map, our life's journey, our little red line or whatever you have on your GPS in your car, maybe a blue line in our car, determines our inclusion in the book of life. At some point, before we were called, we were randomly going around on our map. Maybe going a little here, maybe going a little there, just looping around. There's constant detours. You know, if you look at it from way far back, especially after your calling, you'll say, what was I thinking? You know, and that's one of the things when our eyes are open to say, okay, what is actually going on in our lives after our calling? It should look a lot different. Instead of wandering around, we should have a destination in mind, and that's something that God expects us to mature and to become Christ-like. Before, kind of just wandered around, like I said, just doing whatever we wanted to do. I killed my old watch at the feast in Jamaica. Apparently it's waterproof, but it's not hot waterproof, so... Went swimming with it, and I kept checking it, and it's like, okay, it's still alive, I'm fine. And this is after almost losing my watch. That's a whole different story. Almost losing my watch, losing my phone, my phone in some water. So instead of being smart and saying, hey, this is electronic, and this is electronic, I went swimming in it, and it died. So unfortunately, I had to get a new one. And my daughter asked me, why didn't you get a new one sooner? Or at least a smartwatch. So mark this down. Usually when I buy something that's cutting-edge technology, you know, smartwatches are kind of cutting-edge technology. Usually when I buy that sort of stuff, the next day, the next week, oh, something leaps and bounds comes out. So I was talking with my daughter about that. So keep an eye on the news. You might see something that, you know, because I got a new watch, it's a smartwatch, might be something that, you know, the next leap of technology is coming out. Well, I say this because during the time that my old watch died, I wasn't able to keep an wrap on my exercise. I have an elliptical at home, so I do the elliptical, and my watch usually tracks it, and the heart rate especially. That's kind of the goal, is to build up the cardio strength. So I got this new watch. I'm like, okay, get on the old elliptical and see how I'm doing. My heart rate was low. And I think, wow, I'm in good shape. I must be a runner now. My heart rate's like not even in the high levels. All right, great, great. So then I'm thinking, okay, well, I don't think I am. So I usually watch Jeopardy on TV while I'm on my elliptical. So it was commercial. So I was flipping through the channels. And that day, this one channel was focusing on the Bill Clinton scandals. And so, start watching that a little bit. See all, these guys are just going back and armchair quarterbacking the Clinton scandals. And they're like, okay. And they're just saying, yeah, we lied. Oh, and this guy got millions of dollars. He got appointed at this company and all the dirty stuff. So pretty soon, take a look. My heart rate's back up. So it's okay. So get my heart rate up. Okay, no, I'm not a marathon runner. My heart rate went back up again, but that's something that obviously for those who lived through it, the road that especially our president did back in the late 90s, I don't think anybody could look at that and say that is a good road to take. No, that's much the opposite. Kind of a little interesting story. I was dating my wife in 98, and the day before school, or the weekend before school started, there was a church camp out. So I went up there to spend a weekend with my wife and her family. And so we went out to the lake and spent the afternoon at the lake and got heat stroke. And so I kind of, not exactly a machismo thing to do, to have heat stroke for your girlfriend. It's guys might want to write that down if you have any. So they pulled me out of the water. I was in the water when the bad stuff happened. They pulled me out of the water, and I was sitting waiting for the ambulance to come. And so they're asking me questions, and I'm kind of fading in and out of consciousness. What's your name? Okay, passed that one. I got my name right. Good. Who's our president? I just shuddered. Ugh, Bill Clinton. Because that scandal was going on. So, yeah, me and Mr. Clinton, we'll see how things go at the White Throne Judgment. If I'm, I have to deal with him to help bring him back into the good. But like I said, it's something that mankind, at their own ways, will do what they want to do. And that's something that we had at our calling a choice to make. Do we keep wandering around blindly, or do we get onto the path that God calls us onto? Repentance in the Old Testament and the New Testament means to change paths, to change directions. Even after conversion, we can, from time to time, be running in the opposite way of God, calling a spade. There's times where we know the right way, and we say, and it's something that obviously God's not looking for in one of his people, but it's something that hopefully we recognize and say, okay, I need to go back the other way. Or we could be flirting along that line, just kind of meandering along it, just along the path, just kind of, step here, step there, just a little bit off the path. There's a word in the Greek that's used 57 times for straying or wandering or being deceived. That's where we get our word planet. That's something that the old Greeks, when they're making up that word, could see there are these little things that are kind of wandering around. They're kind of going in a circular or a little bit of a path. I can't really tell. They're kind of wandering around. That's where we get the word planet from. And that's same idea from the Bible, just straying, wandering. Or that's something that 57 times it's used for being deceived. It's not that we're running purposely off path, but just a little wander here, a little wander there. And that can get very dangerous spiritually for our lives. We have to be aware of where we are to God's true path. And Passover is an annual check to make sure that we are on that right path. Now, fortunately, Passover is still 4 months away, so that means it's next week. But time flies these days. But that's something that obviously all year long we have to be very diligent to make sure that we stay on the right path. So speaking of motion, let's look at the idea of actually stopping motion, halting or stopping. I mentioned last time I spoke that the New Testament's filled with this idea, and I found about 278 times in a somewhat quick search to stop doing carnal things. And by carnal things, I don't mean egregious sins like murder. We have to stomp and, pound the podium. Stop murdering people. Hopefully that doesn't need to happen, because I don't think anybody here is a violent murderer. Or wrath, outbursts of wrath. People that, throwing chairs all the time. It's egregious stuff. No, it's something that instead can be seen as normal for humanity. Let's go to Matthew 6, verse 25. Matthew 6, verse 25. This is in the midst of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is talking about how to conduct our lives earlier in this chapter and obviously in the greater Sermon on the Mount. Things like, don't be overdramatic when you fast. You're not fasting for man. You're fasting for God. That's something that God's not looking for when you do fasting the wrong way. Don't focus on things on this earth, earthly treasures that don't last. So Matthew 6, verse 25, Jesus says, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? To not worry is a difficult thing to do. Speaking of Mr. Wizard, I can remember one time he had this real long kitchen knife, and he had this little kid, and he bent a paperclip into a V, and he put it on the table, and he put the knife so that the paperclip was straddling that knife. And he told the kid, okay, keep it steady. Don't let it move. So the kid sat there, okay. But then eventually that little paperclip just wandered down that knife until it fell down off the knife. And he said, well, basically what you're doing, your mind is saying, okay, it's going this way. Come back this way. And it's going that way. Compensate. Overcompensate. Go that way. And then pretty soon that thing's just running down that knife edge. Don't try this at home without a parent around. I don't want anybody to have a little butcher knife and, hey, check this out. So be very careful. Mr. Wizard has another thing that was on the Wikipedia. In the I think it was 90s or 2000s, somebody said, okay, well, he does such great chemistry experiments. We're going to put together a chemistry set. They tried to get all the chemicals together that he used. They found out that basically the law prevented most of the sale of those chemicals. So he's a little bit of a rogue. He wasn't the overprotective, coming out in a positive pressure suit, goggles and glasses and stuff like that. So be careful if you try that experiment. But same thing with worry in our lives. We can tell ourselves, don't worry. And that makes our mind worry. And it feeds on itself. Don't worry. Well, I'm not worrying. But worry. No, I'm not worrying. And it builds up in your mind. And you can ask yourself, does this worry show a lack of faith? And Jesus says, don't worry. Well, everybody worries. Everyone has concerns in life. Depending on the billboard you read, between 1 in 5 and 1 in 8 children in the United States struggles with hunger. That's a worry for the parent whose kid is looking up at them for food. What are we going to eat? Again, 1 in 5, 1 in 8, the parent's saying, I'm not going to do it. I can't feed you tonight. That's something that is terrible. The United States, 2023, in this nation, we still have problems that people would think, that only happens in a third world country. No, it's 1 in 5, 1 in 8. That's big. And concerned citizens and people that looking at the plan of God, we have to be able to wrap our minds around that, to help people one day get over that worry, to understand that, okay, like Mr. Lindenberg was talking about, after the return of Jesus Christ, We're going to be there to say, don't worry, everything will be fine. You know, food problems, whether we just, I don't know if we will, maybe we do wave our hands in this big Thanksgiving setup, you know, turkey and potatoes and everything just shows up. I don't know. It's something that, are we going to, you know, be limited in our roles? Are we going to be able to do miraculous stuff that Jesus did? You know, it's something to ponder, I guess, in your meditation, you know, because I think all of us would. You know, okay, after the Day of Trumpets, it's going to be a whole bunch of smolder and ash and smoke, and it would be nice to say, okay, clear that table off. Here, boom. Here's a Thanksgiving feast for you, for people that probably didn't eat for many, many days at a time. Coming up to the day that Jesus returns, it's going to be a lot of bad news. So, is Jesus being cold here in Matthew 6, but cold and loving, saying, don't worry? Well, no. It's a call to stop worrying. Again, that motion, to stop, to cease, to ease your mind. Taper down your thoughts of worry. Focus on God's ways and don't stress on physical things. The devil preys on human thought. If he can get people to live in a high-stress world, his job is that much easier. Look outside those doors. That's what's happening today. Wars, rumors of wars. South America, there's might be a war starting up there. You know, it's something that we have to keep an eye on coming towards that time. But Jesus is saying to breathe, to relax, to focus on God, and he'll provide. For many newcomers into the faith, there's probably quite a few that worry about tithing. They say, you want me to take my paltry check and set 20% of it away? Even back in the day, 30% for third tithe years? Probably worried their whole calling away. Think of the parable of the sowers. These little sprouts come up real quick and then they die. Well, for some people, what's going on? You want me to 20%? That's a lot of money that you want me to set aside? Jesus says, calm down. Don't worry about what you'll eat and drink, what you'll wear. Today's terms, what you'll drive. You know, that's a concern for a lot of people. If you're faithful to God, then he'll be faithful to you, keep you warm and happy. It's not an instant guarantee, but know that God is working things out, things in the background that are happening. It would be nice. Mr. Lindbergh mentioned Kirk Cameron, Growing Pains. There was an episode where Kirk's character was needed money. So he prayed, God, give me some money, please. I need money. Ding dong, the front door walks up. Somebody's going door to door with a can of money for charity. Oh, thank you. And he grabs it and he takes it away from the guy. No, it's something that God doesn't answer our prayers like that. It's something that, again, would be nice. And in that episode, his younger brother drops to his knees and starts praying then and there because he saw the instant answer to that prayer. No, it doesn't happen that way. We all know that. But it's something that we have to have faith that God is working things out. That one of the favorite VeggieTale verses, all things work out for those who, what is it? Is it Romans 8:28? I think it is Romans 8:28. Let's see. Romans 8:28. Yeah, I still remember that. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purpose. And again, it's not an immediate thing. You can't say, okay, God, I want this. God, I want that. What would that mean for us? How is there spiritual growth if everything you want is right then and there? I want $1 million. Everybody says, I want $1 million. Everybody's got $1 million. We have nowhere to walk because there's stacks and stacks of money. How does that help us in our spiritual walk? Well, it's something that obviously things that make us worry is something that builds our spiritual character. The command to stop fearing, and it is a command, is used about 23 times in the New Testament, mostly words of Jesus. and again, in ways of comforting. He knows what it means to be human, to experience all the emotions that we feel. Hebrews 2:17 in the New Revised Standard Version starts out, "Therefore he had to become like his brothers and sisters in every aspect, so that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God." That means that he did feel what it's like to have problems, like we do in our day-to-day life. And I'm sure, not looking completely down at the end of his road in his life, you know, the life that he had physically here on earth in his first coming, he probably did have day-to-day worries. You know, okay, is there going to be enough work? Is there going to be food on the table? It's something that, you know, maybe he did have to experience it, that, okay, the problems that we feel, we have a high priest that is able to say, "I know what you feel. I know what you're going through." And to still, at the end of it, say, "Don't worry. Don't worry about life itself." He was victorious over this world, and therefore can encourage us to cast his doubts, or cast our doubts upon him. It's Psalm 55:22. Cast doubt or all of our problems on his Father as well. That's 1 Peter 5:7. I'll read that from the Amplified Version. 1 Peter 5:7 says, "Casting the whole of your care," and they add, "all your anxieties, all your worries, all your concerns, once and for all, on him. For he cares for you affectionately and cares about you watchfully." That's something that it's obviously not just a one-time thing that kind of looks like it's leaning to in here. But no, it's a continuous thing. God cares for us and watches over us to care for his people. So Jesus doesn't coldly say, "Don't worry," and then leaves you out in the cold to fend for yourself on your spiritual road. It's a much different story. So the opposite of stopping is moving along our paths. There we go. Get a little extra P work out here. Our spiritual walk is defined by growing in faith and knowledge of God along our path. Those vain Christians that say the ideas along the lines of what Mr. Lindbergh was talking about, just cheap ideas, profess the name of the Lord and you'll be eternally saved, really don't get the idea of that long spiritual road. Our calling and baptism is the start of our journey and not the end of it. They kind of want it to look like, okay, starting on the road, take one step, you're there. That would be nice, but we're called to much more and to build and to develop the character of our elder brother, Jesus Christ. So let's see how this works. Let's go to James 1:4. James 1:4. Keep it short today and give only one example. Any more would be a Bible study, and we just had a Bible study from Mr. Lindbergh. So the context of this passage is having your faith tested. James 1:4 says, "But let your patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Now we have patient people here today. Do any of those patient people think they are perfect and complete? Don't see any hands. It's not to downgrade anybody or to diminish anybody, but anybody who's been on their walk for a long period of time knows that there's still a long way to get on our long walk to the destination, which is that fullness of Jesus Christ, that character, that perfect character that he exhibits in the gospel message in particular. Even the Apostle Paul, who wrote up to 14 books of the New Testament, a very pivotal pillar of the church, wrote near the end of his life that he was the chief sinner. Not a casual weekend warrior sinner, but the chief sinner. If we were to look at our walks, I think that any of us would consider ourselves miles behind Paul. And again, not to diminish anybody, but just a realization of our spiritual walk. And it shouldn't discourage us. Say, "Well, Paul's up there. Jesus is way up there. Why keep going?" Well, no, that's not what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to keep on going. We're to keep moving and building right attitudes, right character as we move along our lives. That's one of the greatest things about the plan of God. We're not called to be brainless drones, forged into the image of Jesus, but to have character blended into ours. Like salt, another example from the Sermon on the Mount, there are many different kinds of salt. Himalayan, kosher, rock, flake, Malden salt, which is really good on chocolate. All are sodium chloride based, but they all have their own characteristic, their size. Some of them have little additives. Himalayan salt is something that has other minerals in it that gives it a very special flavor, and very special purpose as well. The same is with us. God chose us because he saw that in our hearts we'd be obedient to him and called us to put us on that road to one day becoming part of his family. So our Christian walk is indeed an action. We are called to leave behind the things that could hinder our walk. In Hebrews 12, verse 1, it's written to lay aside every weight that would hinder our run. And Paul uses many, many athletic metaphors and passages that he talks about how we are to basically be athletes on that destination. And it's something that all of us are striving for, that crown. It's not that it's a diminished participation award. Everybody gets a little award. No, it's into the family of God. That's something in our lives we need to get rid of, what would hinder us on that run. We would all but tie our shoelaces together and bubble around aimlessly if it weren't for that calling that God gave us. And it's leading us, and Jesus up there at the front to say, come on, guys, this way. Don't. Go strain off straight this way. We're called to run a great path, a way to victory in the family of God. So let's make great motion and run that great final victory.
Thank you, Mr. Braswell. A very important message both were today. How many of you remember, and for me, this started back around feast time. Of course, that's something that far back becomes a blur. But how many of you remember being at the feast for years and the last song that was always sung? I thought about that and started looking for it. I went to the old hymnals and didn't find it there, didn't have the gray one. But I started looking in our hymnal, and there was one there. This song was sung almost every last great day, the last song of the last great day. And I see people nodding their heads. It's an important song. It has a lot of meaning. So please stand. And we'll sing hymn number 10, God Be With You. God be with you till we meet again. By his counsel guide, uphold you. With his shepherd's care enfold you. God be with you till we meet again. God be with you till we meet again. Neath his wings of shelter hide you. Daily bread he will provide you. God be with you till we meet again. God be with you till we meet again. If a trial should confound you, God will put his arms around. God be with you till we meet again. God
God be with you till we meet again. May his love be ever o'er you. Strike death's threatening way before you. God be with you till we meet again.
For the closing prayer, Mr. Bill Halstead.
Father in heaven, great God Almighty, we come before you at the end of the service. We truly are grateful for the things that we've heard today. We ask that that you can help us to internalize these things, help us to grow, draw closer to you. We do thank you for the time we have together here and the peace that we have. And we ask that you will continue to bring us together in peace. We do ask that you'll get everybody home safely today, that we can all have non-eventful drives home. And we ask that you'll bless anything that we eat here. And we do put all these things in your hands. And we ask all this in your most holy and righteous Son's name, Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen.
Sorry about that. I forgot that. I got into singing that song. And, well, he'll remember.